Hey, everyone. Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.
Studios in downtown South Bend.
Let's go! Come on!
Welcome to Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Wow, don't blink. A lot of major intestinal fortitude going on here.
On your home for Notre Dame football.
Knocked down by Wooden. The game is over. The Irish is upset. Florida State, Notre Dame is number one.
And Notre Dame basketball.
Number one ranked UCLA Bruins have been upset.
National championship for Notre Dame.
Plus, Fighting Irish hockey.
They score! Jake Evans scores! Notre Dame, 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The NFL and Major League Baseball.
Oh my gracious, yep. How about that?
Sports Radio 960 WSBT, WSBTradio.com. The free WSBT radio app.
Big time onions!
Now, here's your host, seven-time Associated Press Broadcasting Award winner, Darren Pritchett.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat 508 on this Tuesday, April the 23rd of 2024. I'm Darren. Allison Hayes from ABC 57 joins me once again for the 5 o'clock hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. She'll be taking a summertime vacation from the show, but will come back when fall camp.
I promise I'll
underway.
Be back, but I cannot wait to have a little bit of a break.
Yeah, it's a fun job being in the Notre Dame media, but at times you need a little bit of a break.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a little bit. But the football news never stops. As we found out in December with the transfer portal and everything that can happen, and even today we had some news. As for all the people that worry about the Irish roster being over 85, it went down by one today. To 87. We'll tell you about that.
You gotta imagine there's gonna be a few more maybe jumping ship also.
There could be a medical. There could be another person or two that leaves. You just never know. We will talk about the person who left coming up in just a couple of moments. We'll continue to focus on the Blue Goal game as we'll talk about some of the biggest developments. Is there a concern about this team coming out of spring practice? Who are the MVPs of the game? We'll have those conversations. We've got our Twitter question of the day. We have Notre Dame football recruiting conversation with Mike Singer coming up at 6:15 tonight. And we'll wrap up the program with our sports wagering segment. We are done a little early tonight because the South Bend Cubs are playing those pesky River Bandits from Quad Cities at Four Winds Field if the weather holds. 7:05 first pitch, 6:45 pregame here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. I'll say this, just from an enjoyment standpoint of an exhibition scrimmage game involving a college football team. Now, I had to watch the ball calling the game here on the radio, but I'll tell you what, I thoroughly enjoyed watching Marcus Freeman's team play. It was a competitive game. There was excitement. Last year was a little lopsided. The quarterback play was, yeah. This year, a whole lot different. I just felt like it was fun for the fans and fun for us in the media to watch a very competitive game with a lot of promising results, I thought, on Saturday.
Yeah, and you know, I got to watch it. So I did our show. We did ABC 57 kickoff. By the way, you can watch the full show if you missed it. We put it up on YouTube. So I'll be sharing that later if you want to catch anything you missed. But it was fun for me because after I was done working, I went up to the press box for a little bit, but then I went down and just joined my family. All of my kids were there. My husband was there, and I got to sit in the stands and sort of watch it just from a fan perspective.
Sure.
And it was really enjoyable. They made it, it did. It felt like a game, and it felt like an event, and it was fun to be a part of all of that. I also found out after the fact that I think it might not be allowed anymore, but we hoisted up our three-year-old and did the push-ups on the touchdown, and it was just fun. It was fun to be a part of all that. And then
I didn't know that was a rule now.
Well, I don't. No one told us not to do it in the moment, but after the fact, because I posted the video, I had a couple people say, reach out, hey, you're not supposed to do that anymore. I guess during COVID, they changed that rule or something, and now it's only supposed to be in the student section or something. I don't know. We'll check into that. But
that happened all last year.
I know.
All over the
stadium.
And
that's such a cool tradition. That is something you do not see any place else in college football. That is strictly a Notre Dame thing. Don't take that away. It was so much fun. It was fun to be a part of it. A couple years ago, I got to do it myself for a game and get hoisted up, and it was just like a bucket list thing to do, and I loved it. So
I mean, back in the day, we took away the Bob Davie t-shirts that were in the stadium. Those went by the wayside, but no, the push-up thing's really cool.
Yeah.
That's a cool tradition.
And then, of course, afterwards, because, you know, I will say this, when you go and do it more, like, I went in mom mode, so then, you know, I'm taking care of them, I'm getting them hot dogs and the whole thing. So I felt like there in the moment, I was watching, but I couldn't fully, as if I would have been in the press box in work mode. So I came home, and it was nice that I watched it fully on replay on Peacock and really got to see it more, you know, for what it was. And I thought they did a nice job on their broadcast also.
I'll say this. For the first time, I sat in the stands for the Central Michigan game for the fourth quarter. And I've always been in the press box, and I'm appreciative of that opportunity. It's a luxury. But I sat in the corner in the top row with my fiance, and the view was amazing. There's not a bad seat in the house. It's really a cool place to watch a college football game. So fans, I know probably you'd like to be up in the press box, but it's pretty cool being inside the house that Rockne built pretty much anywhere.
I always start every game out on, they have that like balcony, you know where the press box is, and then out on that corner, you can go stand out there. Cause I like, that's the one thing. I mean, press boxes are great, but I love the sound of the crowd. I want to feel it. I want to feel like I'm a part of it. So I say, even if it's like freezing cold, I'll stay out there as long as I possibly can. And just to get the real feel of the atmosphere of what it's like. So
I will say the Ohio State game, you could feel it through the plexiglass
man.
Of the press box that particular night.
Oh, that
was
amazing.
Electric.
That was a special moment to be a part of at Notre Dame for sure.
Until the final two plays.
Yeah.
Then it got a little quieter for a couple of moments, the gasps from the crowd. All right, let's get to it. Let's talk some Notre Dame football, get some of Allison's thoughts on the Blue Gold game on Saturday. So let's start our opening topics with this. What was the biggest positive development to come out of the Blue Gold game, in your opinion?
I just thought really overall the offense looked significantly better to me than it did in the Jersey scrimmage just the week before. That felt a little bit like a mess. And the defense looked great in that scrimmage, but you know, in a Blue Gold game, you want to see some offense. You want to see your quarterbacks look like quarterbacks. And overall, I mean, I think all three quarterbacks that played looked relatively good. And I was pleasantly surprised with Angeli. I thought he played smoother and better than I was expecting. And then Minchie, to me, I've always liked Minchie. I love that he can run. I love that he's big body. That was kind of the one where I feel like he could end up being that odd man out. I feel like Angeli solidified himself as number two. It's Riley's job when he gets back. CJ Carr is the man. He is the future of this program. And I like Minchie a lot. But if I was him, I'd be looking into the transfer portal, because Angeli's not leaving. I don't think he's leaving no matter what. And I think he's got that number two locked down. Another positive thing that stood out to me again was the wide receivers. And with five guys out, including Jaden Thomas, Cam Williams, Jordan Faison, Bo Collins not here yet, like those, the other guys that were there, I thought looked really good, looked really solid. Some of those young guys, Micah Gilbert, he was really impressive. And, you know, even Jaden Greathouse, he was the quietest one on the day, and he was still played really solid. So I think, you know, everyone kept saying, oh, the wide receivers, this is going to be so much improved this year. And I feel like I'm seeing that coming to fruition after what I witnessed today or Saturday.
I was on Ron Heklinski and Pat King's live podcast last night, and they were having a conversation with me about the Irish quarterbacks, and it was brought up, did I feel like that Steve Angeli might leave for a starting job somewhere else? And I thought, I think it's complicated. From the standpoint, he is one play away from being the starting quarterback on a football team that has a chance to play in the college football playoff and host a game at Notre Dame Stadium. Now, hypothetically, could Steve Angeli go to, worst case, a MAC school and start? Yes.
Sure.
Absolutely. Could he be a starter at a Power 5 school? I think
maybe.
I think maybe not a quarter
tier
of those. I think there would be a realistic shot that we could say yes. But it's a calculated risk if you leave, because again, with Riley Leonard's recent injuries, you're one play away from being the guy on a football team that has a chance to do some outstanding things. I get the sense he loves it here.
Yep.
This is from the outside looking in. I feel like his teammates really, really like him. So leaving now, it would be a calculated risk. It's just how much he wants to be a starting quarterback right now. If he waits, who knows what could happen here? He could be number one on October 1st. He could be number three
right
on October 1st. It is a calculated risk. So to me, it just feels like with what could happen, and Jelly's the next in line, it's awfully hard to leave unless it's just an incredible situation. Minchie's the one, and we've all talked about this. And I feel for him because watching him play quarterback, you feel like he has great potential. You look at the six runs he had in the game. He had a touchdown run. The other five runs all went for first downs.
Right.
He was making plays with his legs, and I thought he got off to a shaky start. Maybe it was nerves. He got a whole lot better as the game went on. But you look where he is right now and where Notre Dame football stands. He's not the present because you got Riley Leonard and Steve Angeli. Then you talk about the future. Well, the C.J. Carr kid looks amazing, and Marcus Freeman has gone out of his way to remind us not just one practice he's looked good, he's looked outstanding throughout spring practice. I talked to someone that went to a lot of spring practices, and they verified he looks like that every single practice that they were at. So the C.J. Carr thing is not a fluke. This kid is coming quickly. So Minchie is just caught in the middle of the present and the future. It feels like he's in no man's land right now. Now, he can play his way up the depth chart, but it just feels like the odds are stacking against him. And if all four stay, I'll just say this. There is no way any team in the country has a better number four quarterback than C.J. Carr. In fact, he's probably better than most twos across college football.
That's a good problem to have. And I do feel for Minchie because I do think he's got all of the tools to be a great quarterback somewhere. And I think that the offense, and Angeli even talked about that, like that Denbrock's offense really is meant to feature a mobile running quarterback, and Angeli is not that. That is not him. So he's got to kind of figure out where he fits into that run pass offense, but he being the least mobile, but he doesn't have the flash. I'm talking Angeli now. He doesn't have that flash. He doesn't have that personality, but he is like the workhorse guy who can get it done. He's serviceable. And if your main guy gets hurt and he's out, I think you feel comfortable putting Angeli into that role.
Yeah, Angeli, I described him yesterday. It was a solid performance, and it was a performance that really didn't change the way I thought about him, good or bad. It's just kind of who he is. He makes the throws. He had a couple of errant ones. I felt like a couple of times he threw change-ups, which were kind of throwing the timing off or setting up a running back in the flat to get hit pretty quickly. But that's kind of who he is, and I'm okay with that. That's a really good number two quarterback for this football team. And I think after what he accomplished in the Sun Bowl, it's like, okay, he's a guy that you can probably win quite a few games with. Now in the playoff,
right,
that might be more debatable, but I just really like the team that is around him. There are so many quality parts on this team. I hate when we start talking about, well, this quarterback just, he's a system quarterback. He just kind of manages the game. Angeli's a little more than that, but you can do that with this team. It just feels like defensively and with the skill that's coming, you can help a guy along the way at the quarterback position who might be more of a game manager and win a lot of games with him. So I'm excited. And the wide receiving core, Deion Colsey, one of the old guys, looked good.
Yes.
And Micah Gilbert, who we had heard was the most ready of the freshmen to play. I think he validated that particular statement because he looked outstanding, and it doesn't hurt. It helps you to look outstanding when C.J. Carr was throwing him the football a couple of times. Just some brilliant throws by C.J. Carr.
Also, by the way, I mean, and Jeremiah Love, it was nice to see him. I know they had been working with him on he is the expected, you know, main running back to return. But to see him get some catches, he was targeted 5 times. He caught the ball 5 times for 41 yards. And I think that is a very positive thing for him, that he's going to have some playing time on both rushing and receiving the ball.
Probably doesn't hurt. They worked him out in the slot a little bit in the spring to help him with his routes and catching the football even better than he did last season. And it was interesting to see Mike Denbrock back up what he told us about more multiple wide receiver sets to run the football. And you saw some two tight end sets, but there was a lot of 4 wide receiver sets where the Irish ran the ball very successfully. Up next, is there a concern for you about this football team exiting spring practice?
Yes. Well, twofold, actually. The main one, and I think anybody who's watching Notre Dame football right now is going to say the same thing, but my biggest concern is the offensive line. That was my concern going into the game, and the game did not make me feel much better about it. The misfired snaps by the backup center, Sam Pendleton, that did not help Angeli at all. And then the situation at offensive tackle is concerning to me. So I'll let you piggyback off of that because I know you're feeling the same thing. And then I've got one more concern too.
That is the one glaring thing that stands out. To be fair to the offensive line, it wasn't the main 5 or 6 guys together. They were broken up, so I have no idea how many times Jagasaw and Baker were playing next to the guards they were with throughout the football game, and chemistry is vital for an offensive line. So I want to make sure we're on the record by saying
that is a good point.
It was not the 5 together, but there was that one play where Jagasaw just got burned by the newcomer, R.J. Oben. And there was just a lot of good penetration on the day. It is a major concern, but I'll say this. It's probably more glaring because you look at the other 20 starting jobs on this football team, there's not a lot of drama. Okay, quarterback, I guess there's going to be a competition, but we all expect Riley Leonard to be the starter. But elsewhere, Allison on the football team, there's not a lot of dramatic competitions that are going to unfold in fall camp. But that probably doesn't help us. You know, we get a little nitpicky when we're trying to find something that's negative. But I think the offensive tackle spot is going to be something that is going to have to evolve in fall camp. And again, let's see when the main 5 or 6 guys get together if those tackles look a little bit better.
My other concern is the kicking game. Just in special teams in general, with losing the punter right before the game who entered the transfer portal, and then Mitch Jeter, he did not look great in that jersey scrimmage. And then, now, to be fair, he was kicking a 50-yard field goal in the blue-gold game that he missed.
Into the wind. It was a pretty stiff
win. Yeah, into the wind. So he was not put into a good situation there, to be fair. But that's just something I feel like that is going to need to be improved. You want to feel comfortable putting your field goal kicker out there. When he banged that one, doinked it right off of the left upright in the jersey game, that was a shorty. I want to say that was only in like the 30-yard range, somewhere in there. So that's something that's just something to keep an eye on. I'm sure they're going to probably be hitting that transfer portal to bring in a new punter, and just we'll have to keep an eye on Mitch Jeter in the kicking game.
Good news is hopefully that Jeter follows what he did at South Carolina. He was pretty dependable there. I will say in warm-ups for the blue goal game with the wind at his back, he kicked one from 55 and it went halfway up the net.
Okay.
Now, again, it was with the wind.
Sure.
But still, it did not graze the crossbar. It went halfway up the net, which tells you it might have been good from 70.
Sure.
With the wind behind him. So that was an awfully impressive kick. And yeah, there's no doubt they're going to bring in a punter. You're going to have to form some sort of competition. You do have Goins, who hasn't kicked since 2015, which is really strange to say. Feels like we're talking about professional sports. Well, he hasn't kicked in a game in 8 or 9 years. Well, this is a 30-year-old that's back in college, and it is an amazing story. But there's no doubt that the punting situation will probably evolve over the next week or two, I would have to imagine. The good news is it feels like they have a lot of good special teams weapons to put out there, and I'm hoping Harrison wins the kickoff return job because he was electric at Marshall, and I would assume he would be a leading candidate to get that job. And
he was out, though, for spring.
Correct.
Yes,
the plantar fasciitis.
Okay.
I'll say this, to be greedy and to be selfish, I kind of want Jordan Faison to win the punt return job because those lacrosse spinning moves – that he always does, including he did one in the Sun Bowl, that little spin move on the football field.
Oh,
it's just like a lacrosse player.
Yes.
He's electric, and I hope he has a chance to return some punts for this football team. Okay, they don't name MVPs anymore for the game, so we'll do some hypotheticals. So from the Notre Dame Blue Goal game, Allison, who would you give the offensive MVP award to?
I don't know how strongly I feel about this, but I'm going to give it to Steve Angeli. His numbers were solid, 17 of 25, 228 yards passing and 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. And that week before in that Jersey scrimmage, he had 2 interceptions, including a pick six. So I just thought, and including in all these numbers I'm rattling off here, he had pretty much what was the highlight of the game with that 62-yard touchdown to Chris Mitchell, who Chris Mitchell is the one who made it the highlight of the game with his moves and his speed. But that was fun to watch and exciting to see Chris Mitchell in action like that and show off that speed. But so I'll give it to Steve. I felt like he played a nice game.
Double move on a walk-on corner. That's cruel, man. That is cruel. And Mitchell made that poor young man pay. I'm going to give co-offensive MVP awards because these two played off each other so well. But I'm going to go CJ Carr and Micah Gilbert, the two freshmen, just based on the seam route that Gilbert ran and the perfect throw by Carr for a touchdown. And then still, the best throw of the day was Carr on the left hash throwing into a swirling wind and throwing the ball all the way across the field and out pattern to Gilbert, who caught it right at the sideline over his shoulder, dropped it into the bucket. Perfect. I'm not sure any NFL quarterback could have made that particular throw any better. So I just thought from an excitement standpoint and also from the standpoint of executing well, I'm going to give it to those two.
Well, I like that. I can't argue with that. And honestly, that is CJ Carr is no doubt. I mean, if you're checking social media, he is the guy that everybody was talking about. He had a really good game again, and he's been doing that all spring. He was 15 for 23 for 165 yards and that touchdown, including that 29-yard touchdown to Micah Gilbert.
As I saw it, he probably threw one ball up for grabs that could have been and should have been intercepted. But I think the wide receiver came over the top of the corner to knock it away, saving Carr an interception. Now, Minshew threw it up for grabs and got picked off. But I was really impressed by Carr. I've watched him, of course, in high school, but to see him in person in a game-like situation, I'll save the rest of my sentence because it plays into our Twitter question of the day from yesterday.
I will say this. I saw, CJ's mom is very active on social media, and she was sharing pictures, you know, from the day and from the weekend, and it was really cute to see Grandpa Lloyd Carr in his green Notre Dame shirt, his green Notre Dame hat. It was like, oh, man, he looks good in green.
My good friend Bob Kamel from Michigan and Notre Dame coaching staffs. He told me one time, Lloyd wasn't the biggest fan of Notre Dame back in the day as a coach. He might say a few things about Notre Dame, but now he's changed. He has changed his ways.
And, you know, and that's how it should be, really. You know, he's just supporting his family. I read somewhere that CJ never had any pressure on him to go to Michigan. And that's a lot to carry. That's a lot of legacy to carry. And some people like that, and some people want to make their own way. And it's cool that he had the support of his family to go wherever he wanted, even if it was to Notre Dame. Now, I wonder if he wanted to go to Ohio State, if there would have been any pushback on that.
Based on Lloyd's thoughts on Notre Dame back in the day, I don't know if it would have mattered. They would have got the same treatment, I have a feeling. But I'll say this. Now, I haven't looked in the last 2 weeks, but Coach Moore taking over for Coach Harbaugh at Michigan, he had not brought in a single recruit in the next class while being head coach.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
So they are the defending national champions, but with Harbaugh leaving, they may not be the cool school.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Much longer.
Did you see that Tony Alford, the former running backs coach at Notre Dame, then at Ohio State for many, many years, he is on the staff now at Michigan.
That's an odd one.
Yes, I was surprised by that.
I don't know if he was pushed and found a new job or he wanted to switch because...
Yeah, why? And to go with a new coach and everything?
That's an interesting move, to say the least. No doubt about it. All right, defensive MVP of the Notre Dame Blue Gold game.
This one was tough for me, too. I mean, in a way, you could almost do the entire defensive line because I thought every one of those guys played really well. I was really impressed with the guys on the edge. I think that was such a question mark from last season was, you know, can they get do better on the putting pressure on the quarterbacks and their edge rushers? And I think he's answered that. I think that is not going to be an issue come fall. And then I'm taking Luke Talich just because I liked his numbers. He was kind of surprised me. He kind of came out of nowhere for me. He had 7 total tackles, a fumble recovery, and an interception, and returned it for 18 yards. He was always in good position. He was very active downhill. So I'm going to give it to Luke.
That's a good choice. You could go with Jason Onye for his pushing.
He was so good, too.
The one hand and two hand pushes on Angeli, knocking him down like a tree falling. You could go with Kia, who had 12 tackles in the ball game. But I'm going to give a strange answer, and it's based on one play. I know this is ridiculous, but I'm going to give the MVP to Jaden Osbury for this reason. Hearing that he was playing some nickel as a linebacker, and then watching him line up against Jaden Greathouse in the slot and follow him across the field and break up the pass play, spectacular. What an advantage you can have if you can have a linebacker who can handle the run game, but yet he can come out into the slot and cover a slot guy that well. That was really, really impressive. So I know more deserving MVPs, but based on one play, that was my wow play of the day. I'm going to give it to the guy who went to high school on the edge of the LSU campus. He didn't want to be a part of the family down in Baton Rouge. Came to South Bend, and he's going to play a big role in this defense in 2024. Allison Hayes from ABC 57. I'm Darren Pritchett. We'll step aside. Now the spring practice sequence is in the books. Have our expectations changed as the team now heads to summer workouts with an eye on fall practice, and we're 130 days away from a trip to Texas A&M to take on the Aggies? We'll have that conversation coming up next on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Moving along the right side of the offensive line. Flag is down. Pass over the middle. Raritan bobbles it. Grabs it at the 5. He rumbles forward. He's into the end zone for a Notre Dame touchdown. Angeli to Eli Raritan from 21 yards. And the blue team has a 6-0 lead.
Part of a really good day for Eli Raritan. Started off spring practice slow. And now we watched him really blossom once again in the blue gold game, being a big part of the offensive production. So good for Eli Raerden coming off the ACL surgeries and did some really good things late last year. Big things expected this year. Allison Hayes from ABC 57. I'm Darren Pritchett. We're being brought to you by Budweiser and their product, Ghost Energy. It's the feel-good energy drink we've all been waiting for, featuring Sour Patch Kids inspired flavors. By Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger. Now with three locations, serving Michiana's most favorite pizza since 1978. Bethel University Athletics. Sign-ups for youth summer sports camps are underway. Visit bupilots.com for details. And by First State Bank, committed to being a premier financial partner. First State Bank demonstrates and delivers hometown values. There was some Notre Dame football news today as the Irish lost a player to the transfer portal, and it is sophomore cornerback Micah Bell. Four-star coming out of high school. One of his great traits was his electric speed. He played in three games as a freshman last year, his only tackle of last year in the Sun Bowl. So Micah Bell enters the portal. So that is now three members of the 2023 class that have gone to the portal. Bell, wide receiver Braylon James, who went to TCU, if I remember right, and Rico Flores Jr. to UCLA. And that is now three players that have left since the start of spring practice: Bell, Clarence Lewis, and Bryce McPherson, the punter. So two corners gone since spring practice started. It makes it even more important that Notre Dame recently hosted Rice cornerback transfer and Treshawn DeVos, and he's a guy that seems even more important. He's going through other visits right now, but I would have to say that Treshawn is even more important than ever, as they're down to six scholarship corners on the roster: Benjamin Morrison, Jaden Mickey, Christian Gray, Carson Hobbs, Chance Tucker, and Leonard Moore. You could probably maybe have an argument that Jordan Clark's in there. He's a safety that plays the nickel spot, but true corners, you're down to six scholarship players on the roster at the current time. So, Allison, it's one of those, you hate to see a guy go because there was a trait that Notre Dame loved and they feel like they could groom him into something special. But you could tell Saturday he was in a secondary role at the cornerback spot. But it does play with the depth,
yes,
of that cornerback position. I'll say this. I love the start of that sentence. Morrison, Mickey, and Gray.
Yeah.
That's an awfully good place to start.
It sure is. And Micah did have a lot of potential to be like a high-caliber cover player. And he's fast. But he must just not want to be doing the waiting game or something, I guess. Or maybe there was a conversation that, you know, I mean, that's been a big thing for Marcus Freeman, is he is honest with his players, good, bad, or otherwise, and he's letting them know. And if they have maybe a better opportunity someplace else, he's like, then you should go ahead and take it. So you have to imagine that must be what Micah is thinking about. But yeah, you got Morrison, you got Jaden Mickey, and Christian Gray. I think those three right there are going to be pretty exciting this fall.
All right, Micah Bell, sophomore corner to the transfer portal. 87 players on the roster. The Irish need to be down to 85, of course, in August, and that will work itself out. It always does. Okay, expectations for 2024 since spring practice is in the book. So, Allison, let me start with this. As we head towards summer workouts and then eventually fall practice, how confident are you that the Irish can be a playoff team?
I feel very confident about it now. Well, of course, it is the new 12-team playoff, and it does change things up. I think Notre Dame is going to put themselves in position to be hosting in December in Notre Dame Stadium, which I think is going to be amazing. I felt good about what I saw. And I know it's just practice. I know you see crazy things happen in the spring game that don't turn into much in the fall sometimes with certain players. But I think we saw what we needed to see from the quarterbacks, and we saw what we wanted to see from the wide receivers who are out there. I think Jeremiah Love is going to be the guy at running back. The biggest concern is just the offensive line, but you made a great point about those guys being split up. They weren't all playing together, which it's all about how they gel. So I think that's great. And then that defense is – that's the centerpiece. That is – they're going to be built on a solid defensive team this year. And the one thing I wanted to see more improvement in was the pass rush, and I think we're going to get that from this line. And I like the secondary. I like the edge rushers. I like the linebackers are loaded at linebacker. I mean, my gosh, there's so much talent there. So I feel really good about it. And I want to see Riley Leonard healthy. And I think if he's healthy, he has a lot of potential to be that missing piece with all of these other pieces now together to put them over that edge.
Offensive coordinator Jared Parker last year did some really good things with this offense, but there were failures at Duke and Louisville. The game plan at Louisville just didn't make any sense.
No sense.
Not to plan for crowd noise at Duke hurt the football team. So I really feel like, no disrespect to him, but Notre Dame is in a much better spot to not get outcoached in every game on offense because of the brilliance of Mike Denbrock. I just will sit here and say to you, I just don't believe they're going to be outcoached in any game this year. They might get out-executed, which is something Marcus Freeman talked about a lot last year, and I pushed back on that. Execution's always important, but there were failures in the offensive coordinator position, and I think that is taken care of itself. Troy opened the door for Mike Denbrock to come here because they wanted Jared Parker. And I don't mean to smile saying that, but my goodness, that is the steal of the century, to go from Jared Parker to Mike Denbrock. And you know what? Jared Parker might be a better head coach and offensive coordinator. That very well could be the case. Or in a couple of years, Jared Parker could be a great offensive coordinator. But the timing, we needed someone in that chair.
With experience.
With experience that knows how to get this done. Because, folks, it is go time for Notre Dame.
It is.
It isn't Alabama, Georgia. How are we going to? It's time to start knocking down those barriers.
And it's year three for Marcus Freeman.
Somebody wrote, and I can't remember who it was on the beat, that this is a must-win year for Marcus Freeman, that he's got to make the playoffs.
Interesting.
I haven't thought about that yet. I'm still in blue-gold mode. I'm going to have to sit back and think about that. Like, he has to make the playoffs. What are you going to do, fire him? I mean, come on.
Well, the 12-team playoff, though, I think that they should be in the 12-team playoff. If they're not finishing that aspect of the season at least number 12.
Hypothetically, if Riley Leonard gets hurt, are you still feeling confident?
Not nearly as confident. Yes, that's true.
That's kind of – or if a key member of the defense, if Benjamin Morrison goes down or Howard Cross goes down – do you still feel as confident?
On
paper, it looks really, really good.
Yes.
It looks really, really good.
On defense, I think they've got enough pieces there that, yes, I think they would be okay. If Riley Leonard goes down, that's cause for concern.
Okay. I'm going to have to ponder the whole must make the playoff thing. That's
for
another day.
I mean, I'm not saying he needs to be fired if he doesn't make it, but I think if at least being in the top 12, that should be a standard at Notre Dame.
Yeah, I haven't read the article, but when you say it's a must make the playoff, then you're kind of saying then maybe he's not the right guy for the job, right? That's one thing that crosses your mind.
Well, you can say, I mean, he's got all the pieces around him this year. He's still been learning on the job. Let's not forget, this is not year three of a multi-year career as a head coach. This is year three of being a head coach, and he's learning it all on the job. But, man, has he brought in the right pieces around him? Al Golden, we just keep thinking one of these days somebody's going to steal him away, but they got him again for another season, and then you bring in Mike Denbrock. It's all coming together.
But see, when I heard that it's a must-make-the-playoff, I'm thinking, no, it's not. I just don't feel like that his job's in jeopardy if he doesn't make the playoff.
I don't think his job is in jeopardy yet.
I need to read the article.
But this team needs to finish in the top 12.
I need to see the reasoning behind that statement.
Yes.
Because I'm having a hard time.
Well, I feel like one of the times we talked, you said, like, year three is one of those, like, it's
historically,
a key historically year for Notre Dame coaches.
It either goes really, really well and they take off, or it dumpster fire. Okay, so on the offensive side of the football, we feel really good. Defensively, we feel really good. And I said this yesterday, and I'm always leery of recency bias when you make these type of statements. But I've been here since 1998, and I can't think of a year in which I feel like this program is as deep with talent that they have this year. I think it's been a long time. Now, you could argue they don't have a Brady Quinn, an elite quarterback. They don't have an elite wide receiver in Michael Floyd. They don't have an elite tight end in Michael Mayer. But even without elite, you have very, very good or outstanding players that are ready to maybe eventually get to that elite level. So I just really like the depth of the roster. We've talked about offensive tackle is the one part where you're going to be biting your fingernails, but the job that Marcus has done recruiting, it is really showing up right now.
100%.
Cool stuff. All right, we will find out soon enough. 130 days until Notre Dame is at Texas A&M. You win that game,
and then you're in good position.
You feel like you're undefeated going into the Florida State game.
Yeah, no doubt.
And then it gets interesting. And I know Eric and I talked about this a couple of times, including on Saturday. You go 10-2 at this schedule, you might be biting your fingernails on the day the playoffs come out. Because
right.
The schedule on paper doesn't look overly strong. Because if you beat A&M and you beat Florida State and you beat USC, you're probably going to be 11-1 or 12-0, I would have to imagine. But if you lose two games with this schedule.
Right. You only have three decent teams on the schedule, really.
On paper.
On paper.
We'll see. Maybe Louisville will be better than
everybody. Yes, that's true.
I saw somebody had them in their top 25, which kind of surprised me because they lost a lot
of
key parts. Okay, Allison Hayes from ABC 57. I'm Darren Pritchett. We'll come back with our Twitter question of the day results from yesterday and today's question. It centers around Notre Dame freshman players. That's on the way next from Sports Radio 960 WSBT. .556 at WSBT. We hope you are checking out Mike Golic Sr. and Mike Golic Jr. on their show that we air Monday through Friday from noon to 1 here on WSBT Radio. It is a really, really entertaining show. And you caught up with, what, Mike Sr.?
Yeah, we had Mike Sr. on kickoff this Saturday. And he's so much fun always. And he talked a little bit about the show. He said he wasn't really thinking that he would get back into the everyday realm, but he's loving it. And he's like, you know, I would never turn down an opportunity to work with my son.
Yeah.
And their chemistry, and we were talking off air. Their show is so fun because it's, while they talk sports, they're also talking pop culture. They're talking food. They get off the rails, and it's just fun to let them be loose, you know?
See, I'm not a Taylor Swift fan. My daughter is. She's a definite Swiftie. And this new album came out, and people were getting up at midnight, and
yes,
it was a double album. And then there's a song that supposedly takes a shot at Kim Kardashian, but I still don't understand why Taylor Swift is taking a shot at Kim Kardashian. So I'm kind of lost in that pop culture story at this particular time. Can you help me at all?
I cannot.
Okay. All right. I read somewhere that people actually saying Kim is maybe the bigger person by not continuing to drag this on. Like writing a song kind of is a weird way to attack someone.
There is past beef between Taylor and Kim because of Kanye. So there was something.
Oh, is it the whole MTV?
Well, yes. And then it was like Kim tried to set Taylor up by recording a phone conversation with Kanye where he was trying to make it sound like Taylor was in on all of that.
Oh, gosh.
So, yes. So that must be, that's the whole backstory.
So we write a story, a song about it. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Hey, it's her life. And she writes about her life.
She sure does. Wow. All right. If you know her, be prepared.
Yeah, right. Be careful.
All right. 558. Allison Hayes from ABC 57. I'm Darren Pritchett. See, I mixed in some pop culture.
There we go.
Just like the Golics. All right. Monday, we asked you our sports beat, InsideIndySports.com Twitter question of the day on my Twitter X account at 960SportsBeat. What is the best way to describe Notre Dame freshman quarterback C.J. Carr's performance in Saturday's Blue Goal game. I offered you four different choices. Number one, better than I expected. Choice number two, what I expected. Choice number three, solid. Choice number four, it was okay. So how would you vote?
There is no way anybody says, it was just okay.
1% said okay.
1%? Come on. Who's that?
Might have been the relation of another quarterback.
Right. Exactly. No, he played exactly as I expected him to play. I expected him to play well, and he did. He's played like that all spring, every practice I've been at to watch, at that jersey scrimmage I watched. He looks like, don't get me wrong. He's still a freshman. He's got places to improve into his body, and he's going to be filling out in his body. But just overall, he was everything that I was hoping to see. He did it. He was out there. He can run the ball. He can pass it. He can make moves, and he makes plays happen, and that's what you want to see. And he's got the moxie, he's got the personality, he's got that extra it factor, and then he's got a connection with Micah Gilbert, which is a really exciting. The one disappointment was that Cam Williams, who I was hoping to get to see the two of them out there together, that he was injured, so he didn't get to play. But yeah, I was really happy to see CJ continue to do what he's been doing all spring.
Okay, so C.J. Carr's Blue Goal game performance, fourth place, okay, got 1%. Solid came in third, 18%. 21% went with what I expected, second, and winning the vote. And I got to be honest, I'm a little surprised since there's been so much fanfare and excitement about C.J. Carr. Even with that, 60% said C.J. Carr's performance in the Blue Goal game was better than they expected. Well.
And that's probably because they haven't seen him in person yet.
Maybe. He would be my leading candidate for the 25 starting quarterback.
No doubt.
Based on what we hear.
Yep.
Okay. We thank you for voting. Here is today's question. Which Notre Dame freshman, not named C.J. Carr, impressed you the most in the Blue Goal game? The three choices are running back Aeneas Williams, wide receiver Micah Gilbert, or linebacker Kingston Viliama Asa, a.k.a. KVA.
I just love the name. I love Kingston. I love how he spells it. I love they call him KVA. This one was a little tough for me because I kind of went back and forth. I was impressed by all three of these kids. Like, really legitimately impressed. Micah, I felt like, had a lot of, not to say hype, but there's been some conversation about him and, you know, will he make it into the rotation? So I don't know if I was, I had expectations for him and he met those expectations. KVA, I felt like I wasn't quite sure. He's young. That's a loaded position, and I really, not just like his numbers weren't necessarily huge. He had four total tackles, three solo, one assist, but he had a pass breakup. But just, he's dialed in, he's got that intensity, and everything you're hearing from everyone else is that he isn't playing like a freshman. Like, he could crack into this rotation that is loaded. And I'm going to go with him. I don't think you can go wrong with any of those three answers, but I'm going to go with KVA.
KVA. Okay. You can vote on my Twitter X account at 960 SportsBeat, Williams, Gilbert, or Viliama Asa. Those are your choices, and we will have the results on tomorrow's program. And, of course, we'll have a brand-new question tomorrow. So, Allison, as we wrap up this portion of your part of the Weekday Sports Beat program, you'll be back in August. I know there's a couple of things to take care of. You want to mention about the show that's still available from Saturday?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, okay. ABC 57 kickoff, we have the complete show up on YouTube, and that will be available to watch if you miss it. You want to just have it on in the background while you're doing other stuff. But we had a couple of really good stories that came out. And actually, so I had this an exclusive one-on-one interview with Jack Swarbrick on Tuesday of last week. I broke that up into two different parts. We kind of went into his favorite moments or most proud of moments and some of his regrets. And then I asked him straight up, you know, is not winning a national championship in football, one of those. And he said, yeah, you know, that's going to sting, and he feels like he should be judged based on that. And I thought that was interesting.
Yep.
Then our second part, he gets into the 12-team playoff, his role in that. Did you know that they worked there? There's a, he was one of four of committee members. They worked on that together for 18 months and nobody knew a thing about it. Not one of them spoke openly or let something slip. I thought that was really impressive. But he was very open about his thoughts on NIL and the transfer portal. Well, since all of this happened, a lawsuit's been filed against Notre Dame. And one of the things that he talked about with me is very relevant. So we just aired that last night. That's on all of our social media platforms and on ABC57.com. But he very much said, you know, their priority is keeping student athletes. And they're not letting them go into that realm of becoming employees of the university for reasons, because he said if there's a disciplinary issue, that no longer goes before the board. That goes to HR. They could start a union. And then you have a student athlete employee players union. That gets very tricky. So it's
retirement plans.
Right, right. I mean, that, seriously.
401ks.
He very much was like, you know what? We basically, they blew it. Like, they had an opportunity to get in front of it, and instead they've been reacting since day one. And that has been the downfall, and that's why, and he used the words disaster, mess.
Wow.
Like, he was very open about it. He said he hates that he's leaving at a time that he feels like it is such a mess, but he is going to continue. You know, and some people really appreciate what he's done. Some people are very critical of what he's done while at Notre Dame, but he does have a pretty impressive track record of successes and things that he brought in at Notre Dame, including some really great hires in Marcus Freeman and in Micah Shrewsbury and Neil Ivey. And that was replacing the all-time winningest coaches in each one of those sports. So, I mean, he did some really great things at Fighting Irish Media, the Crossroads Project, and keeping them independent when so much pressure was to get them to join a conference. So, he had a lot of good things that he accomplished during his time as well.
So check out the ABC 57 socials.
Socials and our website. Yep, any of those. And I'm sharing like crazy, so I always got stuff up there.
So you're going to take a little downtime.
I am.
Good
for
you.
But I promise I'll be back in August. We'll talk more football as soon as fall training camp gets open. I'm ready for you.
All right, very good. Well, enjoy your summer.
Thank you.
I plan on it. All right, please do. That's Allison Hayes from ABC 57. I'm Darren Pritchett. Mike Singer from Blue and Gold talks Notre Dame football recruiting in about 10 minutes on WSBT.
Hey, everyone. Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.